Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. Once again, I want to say a big thank you to every one of you who've taken out time from your busy life to join me today on my radio program. Today is Thursday, October 6th, 2022. The revolution is intensifying, spreading to far more cities than before, and it still continues in Iran as security forces brutally shoot innocent protesters, especially this week at major universities. They're attacking students at major universities, and the young people of Iran are still being brutally tortured and murdered by security forces. I want to update us on one particular story that I've talked about before. It's the story of Iranian teenager Nika Shakarami. Now, the security forces, of course, beat her about the head with a baton. That's very certain, comparing it with all other cases of young teenagers. But like in the case of Mahsa Amini, they're now denying that they had anything to do with her death. And they're saying to the family, besides telling them to don't speak about it publicly, they're saying that we have video of Nika going into a building, and they arrested four young teens who allegedly pushed her off of the building, and she landed on the concrete, and therefore that's why she had the head injuries, the smashed nose. Well, anyone that knows anything about Iran knows that they are habitual liars. They want to cover up what they have done. And so I want to just bring this case to your attention so that you can please pray for this family, because not only did they lie about what happened to Nika, but they, of course, took the body before the family had any chance for a proper burial. They stole the body. And they did this because they were afraid of some kind of uprising at the funeral. So they took Nika's body, and they buried her in a village some 40 miles away. This is the way they treat the family members, stealing a body without their knowledge, without, of course, their permission. And upon hearing the news of Nika's death, the devastated family, the aunt, her name is Atash, she went up to Twitter, which most Iranians do, and she posted on Twitter the lyrics of a Persian song, and they're translated into English that says about Nika, "You slept without lullabies and stories. Take it easy and sleep without pain and sadness. You won't have winter nightmares anymore. Pick flowers of regret in your sleep. There is no place for the slaps of the wind. The sun doesn't burn your face anymore. You won't wake up feeling sad anymore. Either go with hesitation or stay." On my Facebook page, I have a video. I don't know exactly how long ago it was made, but it's a video of Nika with her friends. She's singing karaoke. Now, one of the things you will notice when you see this video is she's doing this publicly, which women are forbidden to do in Iran. But she's just having fun as a young teenager. Now, Attash and Nika's uncle were arrested simply because they went to social media and posted about her death. And Nika's mother is also protesting, and she chants, "Today was your birthday, my love. Today I have to congratulate your martyrdom." Nika turned this week 17. She would have been 17 years old had she lived. It is such a tragedy. For those that may be new to my program, The Cross in the Desert, I want to familiarize you with some of the factors that caused these uprisings. In the past, it was some of the factors, not all of them, but just some. One was the tax, the gas hike prices in 2019. This year, of course, it was the brutal death of Mahsa Amini, but I want to bring to your attention that this is a revolution not just about hijab, but about a society, a group of people, a population that is absolutely fed up with the control and the dictatorship of this Iranian regime. Don't let anyone else tell you it's something different. It is all about the desire for freedom. But the factors of living in Iran that lead women to react this way, I want to talk about what is forbidden to women in Iran. Number one, forbidden to ride bicycles. Yes, the Ayatollah said a few years ago this would tempt a man for a woman to ride a bicycle. They are forbidden to sing publicly. They are forbidden to attend soccer matches. This is why 3 years ago we had an incident with a young girl, Sahar Khodiari, who wanted to attend a soccer match. She went in dressed as a man to get into the soccer stadium. She was caught, arrested, and then she was later to receive a trial. But instead of going through all of that, she set herself on fire and committed suicide. Again, the forbiddens that women cannot do in Iran. Now, men are allowed to have multiple wives, according to Islam. Legal marriageable age for girls was lowered from 18 to just 9 by parliamentary rule. Women are banned from leaving their house without approval from the male head of the household. Married girls could only continue studying with permission from their husband. Men inherit twice as much as women. Divorce is presided over by a religious Sharia judge, of course. And female murder victims have less justice under the law for several reasons. So when you hear all of this, you understand the frustration, the agony inside of every woman about why they rise up and why they are so tired of the rules and the regulations and the dictatorship of the mullahs. Which brings me to another thing I want to read to you about. About 6 years ago, I wrote a groundbreaking book about Rahane Jabari called Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. And I wanted to use her story as an example of the way women are treated in Iran. You know the story of Rahane. She defended herself against a former government agent. He was a rapist. And she stabbed him with a knife because he was trying to rape her. And instead of being exonerated as a victim of rape, she was arrested. She was tortured. They wanted her to change her story because it spoke wrongly of the image of this man that she supposedly killed in self-defense. And when she would not admit that this was anything but a rape and that she was not consenting to sex, as they wanted her to change her story to, they executed her on October 25th, 2014. But what I want to get at is the way women are treated in Iran according to Islamic law. And I want you to understand, this is from my book, The Cross in the Desert, Rahane Jabari, The Crime of Self-Defense. The whole religion of Islam is the reason why women are in rebellion and taken to the streets. Listen to what the Hadith, Volume 1, Book 6, Number 301 says of a woman. I have not seen anyone more deficient in intelligence and religion than you. A cautious, sensible man could be led astray by you. Is not the evidence of two women equal to the witness of one man? There you go. It is the view of women according to Islam. But that's not all. I got plenty of things here I want to talk to you about. This is from, again, the Hadith, which are the teaching traditions and sayings of the Prophet Muhammad not contained in the Quran. And there is a story in the Hadith. Once Allah's apostle went out to the Musulia to offer prayer. Then he passed by the women and said, "O women, give alms, as I have seen that the majority of the hellfire were you women." He had this dream, this vision. Muhammad had this dream that the majority of women in hellfire, I mean the majority of persons in hellfire were women. And then they asked, "Why is it so, Allah's apostle?" He replied, "You curse frequently and are ungrateful to your husbands. I have not seen anyone more deficient in intelligence and religion than you." There's the quote. The women asked, "Oh, Allah's apostle, what is deficient in our intelligence and religion? Is not the evidence of two women equal to the witness of one man?" They replied in the affirmative. They agreed. He said, "This is the deficiency in her intelligence, according to women. Isn't it true that a woman can neither pray nor fast during her menses, during her period?" The woman replied in the affirmative. He said, "This is the deficiency in her religion." Volume 1 of the Hadith, Book 6, Number 301. In another Hadith, we have of the Prophet Muhammad given the news that the people of Persia had made the daughter of Khosrai their queen. And he said this, "Never will succeed such a nation that makes a woman their ruler." Hadith, Volume 9, Book 88, Number 21. This is why Rehaneh Jabari never had a chance in court to tell her story, to explain what happened, to why she defended herself, because this is the view of women in Islam. And that's why I am being their voice. That's why I am standing up for them. But what I want to do is balance out everything I'm telling you with how Christianity, how Jesus treated women in comparison to Islam and Muhammad. This is really, really important. In Jesus' time, of course, women weren't allowed to enter the temple in Jerusalem in the same way men were. There was discrimination then. Women were not to go beyond a designated boundary line in the outer court. Women were forbidden from touching the Torah. And rabbis could not teach women how to study the sacred text. This was the Jewish view. In synagogues, women weren't allowed to read aloud from the Torah and were generally excluded from worshiping God in ways that men were allowed to worship. So from a societal perspective, women were treated as an oppressed class of people. Men were not supposed to greet the woman in public. Unmarried women lived under the complete authority of their father or another male relative if the father was deceased. Once married, according to Jewish law, women were under the absolute authority of their husband or a male relative if the husband was dead. A woman was not allowed to divorce her husband, same as Iran, although he could divorce her for any reason. A woman's ability to own property or receive an inheritance was greatly diminished, just like in Iran, except through a male relative. Simply put, the first century world that Jesus was born into treated women as second-class citizens with diminished individual rights. But there is going to be a big change now. This misogynistic environment is going to be challenged by women in the name of Jesus. And we're going to see why. according to the Bible, God created male and female equally in his image. When we see the ministry of Jesus, we see how he treated women. He kept close ties with women such as Mary, Martha, and Mary Magdalene. Jesus kept company with women who had been possessed and disease-ridden. That would include Mary Magdalene, who had been cleansed of seven demons. And when others saw women as inferior intellectually, Jesus preached to Mary at his feet, which was the typical place for a male disciple to sit. Jesus didn't object to Mary's desire to learn and didn't question Mary's capacity to even understand all that he taught. Instead, he commended Mary for making the better choice of hearing the teacher speak, asserting that his lessons will not be taken away from her. You know the story of Mary and Martha. So the followers of Jesus included many, many women, many of them who supported the ministry financially. We see that Jesus spoke publicly to a woman against the norms of those days. Jesus had the longest conversation in rejecting these cultural norms with a woman with a checkered past, that is, the Samaritan woman. He initiated a conversation with her. He encountered her at Jacob's well, and for a man to address a woman in public was scandalous. And what is so important about this greeting and this meeting was that the Samaritan woman was also the first person to whom Jesus revealed that he was the Messiah. She became a great missionary for Jesus, bringing others in her town to the knowledge of Christ. We see in the resurrection, he appeared first to women. The resurrected Christ appeared first to Mary Magdalene. He commissioned her to be the first to give the testimony of women. Now, according to the male mindset of the Jewish custom, women, their testimony was inferior to a man, just like in Iran, in court. And so the point being, if you were going to make up a story like the resurrection, you wouldn't include women, which proves that this story really happened because the writer included women in the story as being the first to see Jesus rise from the dead. We see Jesus standing up for women in so many ways. And that's why I'm bringing this to you. He cured a woman in Luke chapter 13 who had been crippled for 18 years on the Sabbath. When the synagogue leader confronted Jesus for having healed the woman on the Sabbath, Jesus defiantly declared the woman as a daughter of Abraham. In making that kind of assertion, Jesus put her and all other women on par in Jewish society with their male counterparts or the sons of men. And Jesus refused to treat women as unclean or deserving of punishment, like the woman caught in adultery. Who among you is the first to cast the stone? If you're without sin, you be the first to cast the stone. And they all walked away. Jesus forgave this woman accused of committing adultery, told her to go and sin no more. He rescued someone from being stoned, particularly this woman. He healed a woman who was ceremonially unclean, who had an issue of blood. She had bled for 12 years. She touched the garment of Jesus, and he called her daughter and commended her for putting faith before the man-made law of menstruation and being ceremonially unclean. So we see here that Jesus never discriminated against women based on their sex, based on their age, their financial or marital status. He went against the norms. Women that were treated inferior became the best friends of Jesus in his ministry. And I think that this is so important. As we view what's going on in Iran, this is supposed to be the bastion of the greatest religion in the world, Islam, right? This is supposed to be the revealed religion, the superior religion. And therefore, if that is true, one of the first things you would see is how they treat women. But you noticed when you do any kind of research, young Muslim in name only women, when they do their research, and I have friends that have told me this, and they find out the violence and the treatment of women and the statements of Muhammad regarding women, and they do their research, they walk away from Islam. Islam has no regard for the dignity and worth of a woman. You may hear all of these stories about Muhammad and what he is supposed to have done, but Muhammad also married a young girl at 6 years of age. Aisha consummated the marriage at 9 and became a pedophile to her. If you know what I mean, this is ridiculous. This is the institutionalizing of child marriage, which they do in Iran. It is horrifying. Many Muslims, especially one of my friends who lives in Canada, when she read about this, it was a big factor in her leaving Islam. When you think of the way women are treated and regarded as property, as sexual slaves, as possessions, as inferior, now you begin to understand exactly why they are rising up. Certainly, it's based on what happened to Mahsa Amini. Certainly, all of this is what happened to Hadith Hajafi, Hana Kia, and just recently, Nika Shakarami. It's all part of it. But deep down, it is these restrictions and these laws and the belittlement and the discrimination of women that has contributed so much to this revolution, to why women are rising up. And you can understand the anger and the frustration when you look at the law, when you see how men are preferred before women, how they in court are received, their testimony is twice that of a woman. Their intelligence is ridiculed. The inheritance rights goes to a man. A woman you really can't divorce. It's very difficult if she does. And women that are beaten, when they go to court, they're told to go back and submit to their husbands. The husband is always right. The woman is always wrong. The woman is nothing more and nothing less than a possession of the husband and a sexual slave. You understand then, when you look into the law, when you look into the court case, for instance, of Rahane Jabari, when you look at how Nika Shakarami was treated, when you look at how these women, when you see the videos of them being chased by security forces, then when they are finally caught, they are beaten. You understand something about what is going on in Iran with the treatment of women. It is disgusting. It is unacceptable, and it will not be tolerated. I will always be their voice. It is something that makes me and should make you very angry. So please don't listen to the media who wants to say this is all about some economic reasons. It is about Islam and the way women are treated. What I want to feature right now is an incredible song by Shervin Hajipour. It's been the anthem of the revolution. He is in jail because he spoke out in this song supporting the protest. It's a song about the protest, but we couldn't understand it. It was in Persian. It was in Farsi, but I have an English version of his song for, and this is something that is so beautiful. This is the impetus for the revolution. Let's listen to this song.
Because of dancing in the street, because we're scared to kiss our lovers when we meet, because of one sister and for all of them, because of changing minds that have gone rotten, because of all the shame of having no money, because of yearning to live life normally, because of a poor child and his lost dreams, because of the fight for equality, because of this polluted air, because of Aliyev and the trees dying there, because of the Pirus and its extinction, because of innocent dogs forbidden, because of tears that never end, because of longing to repeat those moments, because of a smile on all faces, because of students and what the future embraces, because of the promised paradise, because of locked up voices that cannot rise, because of all our children, because of have no end. Because peace is all that we want. Because of sunshine after the long night long. Because of sleeplessness and anxiety. Because of the man, the country, the rebuilding. Because of the girl who wished she was a man. Because of woman, life's freedom.
What a beautiful and a powerful song by Shervin Hajipour. It is rumored that this song could actually win a Grammy because of the impact it has had on this revolution going on in Iran. I hope that Shervin, who is, in my last recollection, is still in jail because of this song. He has impacted a movement, a world, a song that preaches what is happening and why it's happening in Iran so that you can understand. And this song, I've never seen so many airplays of this, if you will, 64 million times on Instagram before he was arrested. It has captivated the hearts. It has been the impetus at every rally in support of Iranians in the various cities like Toronto, Atlanta, Los Angeles. You hear this song. It has become the anthem of the revolution. That's what's happening in Iran. This is a revolution. The Iranian people are out in the street for the fourth week, almost a month. They have been fighting against these brutal dictators. And our responsibility in the support of them is to be their voice. It is to go to these rallies. It is to stand up. It is to make awareness to the media. It is to put their stories first and foremost out there. This is not about individual personalities. This is not about money, fortune, and fame. This is about them. It is about their stories and their struggles and their horrendous, horrendous suffering that they're going through. So please continue to join me on this broadcast every Monday and Thursday. I'm going to do my best to be faithful, to report on what's happening, to be their voice, to interview guests like Marzeh Amirzadeh, who can explain to you the context of what's going on in Iran. Let us pray that the media will continue to rise up. They have been starting to report on this more. Thank the Lord that awareness is getting their attention, that these stories are being covered. So again, I'm very to you for your support, for your coming to my Facebook page. Please share this broadcast on your page. Please bring awareness in your community. Please be a voice and pray for my Iranian friends. God bless you and thank you so much. I will see you again on Monday on the cross in the desert. Thank you.